I think it's kind of like this. If you're going to eat a zombie takeout, you would enjoy it more if you knew no one had fucked it.
Hello and welcome to Zombie Takeout, the B-movie and cult movie show. I'm Joan.
I'm Scotto.
And joining us from MsJennyDreadful.com, I have so much trouble saying that name, Jen Miller, friend of the, you know, who's been here a few times before. Those of you who know the show know her.
Hello.
And before we get into this week, I just want to mention, I saw Black Panther over the weekend.
Oh.
Completely lives up to the hype.
Really?
To be fair, I've only seen the first phase of the MCU up to the first Avengers, but I've seen a lot of other comic book movies, and it is the best comic book movie I've seen. Better than Dark Knight, better than Superman 2. Danny Meeks replied me on Twitter about my tweet about it and asked about those two movies specifically. Yeah, it's better than those.
It's better than the Superman with Richard Pryor.
Oh, by far.
All right, just checking.
I don't know if it's the writing or the cast, but, and this is an overused word, I apologize, but there is a gravitas to it that you don't get in other superhero movies. There's no trace of silliness. That even in Dark Knight and Superman 2, they were a little silly.
You know? But not the one with Richard Pryor in it. That one was...
And to be fair, I do prefer Black Panther to Superman and even Batman, as much as I'm a Batman fan. Black Panther is a little bit... I prefer Black Panther, even though they are very similar. They're basically ninjas with a lot of money and expensive toys.
Yeah. I mean, I just saw, like, the first Guardians of the Galaxy, like, a couple months back. I was like...
Those are the exceptions because they're Guardians movies, but they're more sci-fi than superhero.
Yeah.
Anyway, on to this week's festivities. And some listeners submitted... We have a tweet from Bodo in reference to last week's episode. I just realized, Jen, you haven't seen The Last Jedi, so you might want to mute us for this.
I'll see it eventually.
This isn't really spoilery. He said, I was glad you guys brought up the Clone Wars because I know the banking planets were playing both sides for financial gain. Also, the people that were doing the cloning played both sides. As far as the movies go, I believe they're going to do the stories in sets of threes.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed entirely. They're not going to just ditch the trilogies.
Yeah.
And I think they're having a difficult time of keeping a story straight through a trilogy. I think I said that last time, but you know, that was a long time ago. It was 2 weeks.
Right. And I also heard a speculation that they're going to continue one movie a year. And I don't know if you heard this, Jen, but the plan is to keep the Star Wars movies going long enough so that no one alive today will still be alive when the Star Wars movies end. They want to keep them going indefinitely. And apparently, from what I've heard, and this is pure speculation, but it's going to be one a year for the rest of our lives. I really hope that's accurate. I hope they just reboot them every few years and maybe keep them in trilogies. That's fine.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're going to try to do multiple in 1 year, maybe. Wasn't that the original plan?
And the next one is going to be in May. This coming May.
The solo one.
Less than a year. Right. So.
Yeah. You know, they'll just keep doing it until the prequels are, you know, retro or something.
Of course. You can full circle somehow. They're going to end up back at episode 4. I don't know how they're going to do it, but it's going to happen.
They're going to do it until one of them flops. Yes. Like, really flops. Mm-hmm. I mean, the joke of that Forbes magazine article trying to tell us that The Last Jedi has flopped, even though it's grossed $500 million. Mm-hmm. Like,
quite the flop,
I'd like a flop that.
It was news when Black Panther beat it recently, so obviously The Last Jedi did well. And a tweet from Danny Meeks in reference to this week's movie, What We Do in the Shadows. And he said, I quote this movie all the time. Leave me to do my dark bidding on the internet. I need to have that on a sign above my desk.
That's great.
I'm being on the table.
right, so on to this week's movie, which is from 2014, What We Do in the Shadows, as I just said. Of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by Secrecy. Loose lips burn roommates.
Also brought to you by the Unholy Masquerade. Choose your plus one wisely.
Oh, and I was trying to bring it back up. brought to you by Chips. You'll vomit blood just to have one.
All right, so we begin with four completely different roommates of different backgrounds get together and get real. They're all vampires, of course, though. They needed a puck vampire, though, really, to complete it. But
Deacon was kind of puck.
Yeah, I guess. Well, or maybe Nosferatu was kind of puck. Yeah. So right, they're all the archetypical vampires. You have Nosferatu in the basement. You've got Vlad. You've got a couple Bram Stoker characters in there, or folklore characters. Tossed in, and yes, they've been living together for centuries, and well, they just have your typical, you know, house debates about who does the dishes and people. It kind of reminded me of the Young Ones, the beginning, actually, the four college students of different variety. And I was kind of nervous that like there's not enough to make a movie if they just do this, but fortunately. They move along and bring in other people. Yeah. Of course, they have to eat, so of course they bring in other people. And they go even beyond that, of course, by bringing in other creatures like the swearwolves. The werewolves and the witches and then zombies.
Banshees.
And banshees.
A very articulate zombie, which I liked.
Yes, yes. The problem is that when they did bring food in, though, that, Nosferatu got a hold of them. And when Nosferatu kills, he likes to make them into a vampire, too, just for the hell of it. And so now there are five of them, one of them being sort of modeled off the Twilight ones, which, of course, everybody hates. Let's be honest. And... But he's got the positive side is that he's got a cool friend named Stu he's so cool that they won't even eat him. They'll let him be a human, and he teaches them about, well, the technology they've missed out on. And he ingratiates himself so much into the group that they invite him to Nick invites him to the masquerade ball, which was a really bad idea because he used the piece of meat.
Exactly.
So, I think we can say hilarity ensues pretty much because, it's just about them getting Nick out, Stu out alive, and not getting killed by vampire hunters.
Yeah. And this is basically a Christopher Guest movie about vampires.
Yes.
Like down to like the interview sequences, the whole gag is that there's a documentary crew following them in the lead up to this masquerade, Unholy Masquerade. And in the opening credits, it mentions the New Zealand Documentary Board.
I like the open title sequence where it's like the 70s logo kind of the New Zealand Documentary Board. It's all blurry.
And I would love to know if the New Zealand Documentary Board is a real thing and if they actually like funded this movie or if that's just a gag.
I didn't think they'll look that up.
Well, of course, the person that it took me a while to recognize him, but Vlad, of course.
I looked it up after because I didn't see I've never seen the thing he's most associated with.
I'm like, that's the guy from Flight of the Conchords.
Yeah. Never seen Flight of the Conchords. So I looked him up afterwards, and yeah, he looks so different.
Sure normal. Enough, Jemaine Clement. In fact, I think it was the line that in the intro where I'm like, that's the guy from Flight of the Conchords.
And there's a scene right after the opening, that beginning with the New Zealand board, where Viago reaches out of his coffin to an alarm clock. And it's a very typical alarm clock. It's identical to the one I used to have up until a couple weeks ago when it died.
Oh.
And it just kind of sums up the movie, you know, reaching out of this, you know, a coffin to turn off an alarm clock. And then he does this great Nosferatu rise.
But I loved it because it was, you know, he like got stuck for a little bit and like he's waiting for whatever the mechanism is, like, okay, come on.
And he looks right over to the camera. And
like, that, we're going to get this down.
That bit from Nosferatu freaked me out for years. So to see it used comedically was awesome.
And he does this Andy Kaufman sort of, you know, Latke as a vampire sort of thing.
I was thinking Michael Scott.
No. He's definitely, you know, thank you very much kind of,
yeah,
you know.
Okay. Well, the accent, yeah, but the personality was very Michael Scott.
Well, Michael Scott kind of takes over things. Well, yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah, he kind of does too, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Where he's like, you know, I'm not going to name any names, yeah. Nick.
Incredibly passive aggressive.
Yeah.
And then you have Peter, my favorite character in the movie. The Nosferatu who lives in the basement in a coffin. And there's a spinal column on the floor of his room. So when he's not turning his food into vampires, he really goes to town on it.
I clean the skeletons out of your room.
I just liked how, you know, he's like, I could bring you a broom, you know, you know, and he's just always about, just put some newspapers down. Vampires, we'll put newspapers down.
And Vlad's line about sweeping the hallway with a body.
Or the scene where Viago goes to kill the woman. And he's got the pile of towels and newspapers that he's lying all about. She's like, what's this kind of? Oh, it's nothing.
And I love the line about, just on the delivery about how Vlad is a bit of a pervert.
Yeah.
And Vladislav the poker. As opposed to Vlad the Impaler.
Yes.
And then there's their fourth roommate, Deacon, who he's not the puck. Nick is definitely the puck. But he's kind of the layabout, the one who doesn't want to do anything.
Yeah.
And I love that he was a Nazi. He was a Nazi vampire. And he wasn't a Nazi when he was alive. He was a Nazi vampire.
Right.
Which is a movie we should review.
Yeah, he had to get out of Germany after that, because, you know.
And the
I was just saying, and being either a Nazi or a vampire is bad enough. A Nazi vampire.
And of course, Viago, the head of household, effectively, the guy who likes to run things. He's got this, you know, X that he's still hung up on. He has a picture of her in a silver locket. And if you know vampire fiction, silver's not good for them. So he puts on the locket periodically until he starts smoking.
That's as much as I can do.
I have to say, I like the, but then, you know, when they start getting more technologically, you know, he prints out a picture and like puts it in his coffin and he closes the lid.
I was not prepared for Viago masturbating in the coffin.
The lid just
droops. Yeah, the lid just pops up and down after he brings the picture. Like, almost out of my chair.
Oh my god!
And
the details though in this that you, I mean, you really have to watch this more than one time. Obviously,
I've seen it twice and I still miss things.
Did you notice the pen that Stu like hands? They're asking him like to sign something. It's one of those old timey four color pens.
Oh no, I didn't miss those? That. I remember the pens, but I missed that was.
And since you mentioned Stu Rutherford, who played Stu, is an actual IT technician in real life. He's initially told he would have a bit part in the film so that he would act more naturally. When, you know, when he was filming, he didn't realize his role was so big until the film premiered.
He's like, man, I'm really in this man.
But yeah, you gotta look closely enough. It's like a blue bottom, white top, and I'm like, that's totally what it is.
I totally missed that. Yeah.
And I loved Deacon's ghoul, his little servant. Married woman with kids in like her 40s, who he's just hypnotized into doing everything. She's basically his personal assistant. She, you know, does his laundry, brings him meals. Loved the botched drinking scene. He tries to drink from a woman and it's just a blood fountain.
after laying down all the towels.
Yeah, yeah.
And the
that was Iago.
And right. It just goes everywhere.
I've seen less blood in video games.
Oh, of course. Oh, yeah. The blood quantity in this movie is amazing think about what it is.
Spectacular. And it's really well done. I mean, it's funny, but it's believable.
Well, the thing, I mean, I was actually, the special effects are actually, you know, really decent for,
like, the periodic, like, flying they do.
Yeah.
Completely.
And I mean, you know, and a lot of that is comedic, but but like certain things, like when they're turning into bats and being, you know,
The bat, when Deacon runs off and just turns into a bat, that was beautiful. And the makeup on Vlad at the end. For the whole Unholy Masquerade, he is kind of avoiding the Unholy Masquerade because the Beast is going to be there, and they play up the Beast as this monster who bested him.
Yeah.
So he's avoiding the Unholy Masquerade to avoid the Beast, and he ends up aging because of it. Loved the reveal on the Beast. I don't think we should give that away.
Yeah.
There's a couple of reveals. I don't think we should spoil that. And Stu, what happens with Stu at the end?
Oh, okay.
Did you also notice where the Unholy Masquerade was actually being held?
It looked like just a community center.
It's like the Victoria Bowling Club.
Oh, yeah.
an actual sign for it. I forgot what they said where it was. Like the Unholy Cathedral, the Unholy Masquerade. It was some
horrific nickname.
That they gave it, and just, you just see the sign after they call it that, the Victoria Bowling Club. They just rented a hall.
And just, this was a minor thing, but I loved that Deacon's servant brings him her ex.
Oh, yeah.
And the pronunciation of spaghetti. Boschetti.
It's worms.
They convince him it looks like worms. And
I saw that from Lost Boys.
And his penis is turning into a snake. And then they have to go chasing after him because he runs, obviously. And they established earlier in the film that Vlad can turn into animals, but he has trouble with faces.
He's not as he used to be, you know?
Yeah. He turns into a... He's one of the oldest. So he turns into a cat with Vlad's face.
I like that.
And then they bring in Nick, who again is the Puck. I sympathize with him, but I kind of hate him.
Oh, yeah, everybody hates Nick.
But I'm kind of sympathetic, too. It's weird. And it's a testament to the writing that they can play both of those sides.
Yeah.
And he introduces them to Stu, who teaches them about technology. I loved Vlad's reaction when he learned about Facebook poking.
He's like, yeah. Let's do that.
He poke her and his eyes bulge.
But Viago and you know, him watching sunrises on videos of sunrises. Just to see what they'd look like.
And then the unthinkable happens. Because Nick had been bragging about being a vampire, he kind of tries to show off with this one guy who claimed to be a vampire hunter. Of course, you don't believe it, but it was true. He broke into the basement and ripped Peter.
Yeah.
He killed Peter.
It sounds like, though, that he didn't actually get Peter. Peter got him, but was up too early and got killed.
He was sneaking in. Peter heard him, stepped out of the coffin. It was daylight, but but ultimately the hunter
threw the lid of the coffin on him.
Yeah, right. Yeah, sure. That's right. He pushed that off the lid, the granite lid of the coffin onto the hunter. But of course, it was daylight, and you know he fried.
So he wasn't a very good vampire hunter.
Yeah, because, I mean, if they hadn't had windows open in the basement, you know.
Well, like, and they pulled out the stakes and they said, oh, I think this is just like a table leg. They're just, well, you know, he's standing by himself.
He had a stone coffin, you know. They weren't really concerned about daylight. They didn't think a hunter would break in. And then, you know, they're panicking when they find the body and they're talking about who they should call. And they mention the cops, of course. And then there was a line about not needing Christians that I got a big kick out of. The last thing they need is Christians. Of course, they call the cops. Yeah. And Viago hypnotizes them to overlook anything abnormal. So they walk in and Nick's hovering and
that might have been all my these favorite.
Crazy things going on. Yeah,
you know, they find the dead hunter's laying right there. They think he's drunk. They don't even see Peter's burnt remains.
Well, like, but then you keep getting where they you think they're getting caught. Right. Like, no smoke detectors.
Yeah. When Nick is hovering, they point up and say, "You don't have smoke detectors," and you know they point out that there's a lamp on top of a bucket of something flammable below the what's it called, circuit breaker, you know, right next to Peter's body. So they tease that they're gonna find something, but they never do. Yeah. And then, possibly my favorite part, the procession of shame.
It's not exactly like the Game of Thrones.
Because Nick had talked too much and gotten Peter killed, he has to undertake the procession of shame, which is just standing on the lawn. I think he had a sign on him that said shame, and they all just walk in circles and say shame, shame, shame. This predated that episode of Game of Thrones by about 6 months.
No, I was gonna say, yeah, I mean, you know, yeah, that this was before.
I mean, the book,
but I couldn't help think of it now. Yeah.
I have to think that scene in Game of Thrones was at least partially influenced by this because it is so similar.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we have the masquerade, the articulate zombie.
Oh, yeah.
Zombie in full makeup with the sores and everything, but speaking like a normal person, just explaining how they can't move that quickly. And the Beasts Plus One reminded me so much of Wallace Shawn. Princess Bride, Inconceivable.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Reminded me so much of him.
But without a doubt, they call this a goof in IMDb, but it's definitely one of the best parts of the movie, is when the camera pans back to a mirror. Well, they're doing the whole dance scene where everybody's having this great party. The camera turns into a mirror, of course, and it's just the one human and the zombie just in an empty room.
That had to be a joke. I can't see that as being
They call it a goof because the witches and whatnot would have reflections, too. Right.
Well, but they were banshees, not witches. And I forgot to check if banshees are technically undead.
I mean, it's so much funnier to just have two fucking guys all by themselves in the mirror after seeing like this whole crazy party scene of everybody going nuts.
Hey, I'm normally the one to nitpick, and IMDb is actually out nitpicking me.
Yeah, they're just funny.
And back to the special effects, the wolf transformations.
That was really good. I mean,
on the way from the Unholy Masquerade, they find these wolves who they had run into earlier.
Yeah.
And you know, if you know your lore, vampires and wolves, werewolves hate each other.
The alpha male is another Flight of the Conchords. He's their manager.
Oh, that's right.
I really need to see Flight of the Conchords. I've only heard amazing things about
manager,
it.
Manager, agent, or whatever that guy is that gets them in shitty gigs. And, you know.
And you know, at this point, after the Unholy Masquerade, they're chaining themselves up because they're going to turn. And I just, they turn, of course, mid tying up or chaining up because they had this altercation with the vampires, and the transformations are just brilliant. And I just love the conflicts between the two.
Yeah.
They're really just playing the dozens with each other.
Yeah.
They're really just insulting each other more than anything.
we won't spoil what goes down.
Oh, no, of course. All of that. And I forget how it worked in. I have it in my notes, but there's a line about a mask, making a mask out of crackers.
That was my other.
Oh, yeah, I remember. That's one of my favorite.
That was actually my second line that I was going to do for an intro, but we never got past the fucking sandwich.
Right. Because that line's written in my notes. I was going to bring it up, but it's the intro.
I was going to do her fashioning a mask out of zombie take out of being attacked by ducks and swans.
Yeah. I think it was the thing we can't talk about. It was consolation of the thing we can't talk about.
Oh, yes. It was Deacon's idea of
horrible things that can happen. Like
consoling him. What happened to your friend?
Crackers and having ducks attack it. and the reenactment that says reenactment was hilarious.
Right.
But there's this great melancholy false ending where, you know, it's just another day and, you know, they're signing off from the movie. And then there's this reveal that happens.
Well, I had also assumed the cameraman got killed in that whole mess.
No, he did. They showed that.
They showed one cameraman.
There were multiple cameramen. And
I was expecting them all just to get killed, and that was going to be it.
And there's a great after credit scene too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I was like, maybe this is why I don't remember as much.
It's amazing that we can remember any of this movie, considering we saw the end credits.
I forgot. I was going to start the review by saying I don't really remember much about the movie. I actually forgot the gag instead of the movie.
Yeah.
They're just that good.
Taika Waititi, who played Viago and also co-directed and co-wrote it with Jermaine Clement, revealed that there was so much footage that three cuts were made.
Wow.
One that focused on jokes, one that focused on the story, and the final cut that mixed the two. So there's one that's just jokes and one that's just story.
Yeah, I heard that it took like a year to cut down all the footage.
I'd watch both of those. I don't know. Is there like a DVD release where you can get all three cuts?
And since I mentioned, I don't know. I don't think I should check the DVD. I would imagine they probably, you know, didn't bother with those. Taika Waititi also directed Thor Ragnarok, since I mentioned the MCU earlier.
Really?
One of the co-directors of this directed a Marvel movie.
That's crazy.
And I've heard wonderful things about Thor Ragnarok. It's also apparently one of the best.
On to
sequels and remakes.
Totally.
A sequel to the film, which will focus on the werewolves depicted in the movie, is currently in development.
Thank God.
Originally rumored to be titled What We Do in the Moonlight, the working title was later announced as We're Wolves. W-E-R-A-R-E.
Man, I wish you'd been swear wolves, man.
Yeah. In September 2016, it was revealed that Waititi and Clement are planning a procedural comedy based on the cops in the movie, Karen and Mike.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
But like in Paranormal. That's
great. Who just miss all the clues of the crime scene.
I imagine it would be kind of a Reno 911 thing. And an American version of the film is being planned. Now, I know I'm going to knee jerk to that too. I did.
They're going to ruin it.
To be developed as a TV series. A pilot has been ordered by FX. The pilot will feature Kevin Novak, Natasha, I didn't practice these names, Demetrio, Harvey Gullin, I'm going to say. Apologies for mispronunciations. And one name I'm holding off till last, Matt Berry. Does the name ring a bell? The boss on the IT Crowd.
Okay.
That saves it for me.
Yeah. Well, we'll see, I guess. You know, I mean, I'll watch it.
If you haven't seen the IT Crowd, another great British comedy, highly recommended.
Ah, the second boss.
The IT second crowd. Yeah, okay. The here one.
Not the one that commits suicide.
No. That could save it.
Because they're not getting American actors to do it.
I don't know anything about the other actors. I've never seen them anything. All right, so on to Brains.
On to Brains.
I have no criticisms of this movie. It's flawless. I'm going 5.
I'm pretty close. See, I probably want to watch it more to see more of the details out of it. I'm going 4.5.
All right, Jen.
I would go 5 too. I mean, I think it's great.
All right. So, what have we learned?
We learned you need to get some big trousers. You need some room to grow into them.
And I learned that vampires don't do dishes.
Oh, and I learned if you're going to be a werewolf, you've got to be able to calm down the cursing. They're werewolves, not swearwolves. Mm-hmm. And see, this was better when I hadn't said it like 20 times.
Oh, yeah. All right, that's it for what we do in the shadows. Jen, thanks for joining us. Where can people find you online?
Oh, MissJennyDreadful.com, MSJennyDreadful.com.
All right. Give this video a like if you enjoyed it. Subscribe if you haven't. Got to do all that YouTuber stuff.
Of course.
And down in the description, in addition to Jen's links, you'll find a link to the trailer for what we do in the shadows, and all of our links, social media, our voicemail number, our email address, and links to subscribe via RSS or iTunes to the audio version of this show. And all right, so until next time, when we'll be reviewing Perfume and with another special guest. Always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life,
there you are.
There you are.